As PG&E warns of a potential second California blackout, San Jose's mayor lobbies for a transformation.
They're going to see if they can put together a coalition.
And our series on women in the workplace continues with a look at the military.
There are a lot of people who just think that women are not as strong leaders as men in some of the military branches.
Plus, WeWork is weighing emergency financing. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a closer look at a new proposal from San Jose's mayor to transform PG&E, here's what you missed. WeWork's board is meeting today to weigh emergency financing options. It's looking to reach a decision this week on whether to accept an offer from SoftBank or from JP Morgan. We report that the SoftBank deal would give the Japanese conglomerate more than 50% equity ownership in WeWork. It would also further sideline co-founder Adam Neumann, all in the hopes of turning around the company's finances. If SoftBank's deal is accepted, it will have invested over $10 billion and lent $5 billion more to a company that it now values at $8 billion. And as promised, an update on Canadian elections. Preliminary results indicate that Justin Trudeau has won re-election.
And I cannot thank you enough, so instead I'll simply say this. You did it, my friends. Congratulations.
However, he emerges with a weakened hold on power. That's because Mr. Trudeau's Liberal Party would likely have to form a minority government. That means they need the support of other, smaller parties to pass legislation. And President Trump has confirmed that he's planning on keeping a small number of American troops in northeast Syria. He also suggested that an American company could help the Syrian Kurds develop the oil fields there for export.
We'll work something out with the Kurds so that they have some money, they have some cash flow. Maybe we'll get one of our big oil companies to go in and do it properly.
Former administration officials say the president's plan raises a host of legal, technical, and diplomatic issues. And industry analysts say it's unlikely to draw any interest from the oil companies it would need to succeed. Now, our main story this morning, PG&E. Late yesterday, the bankrupt utility said a second round of blackouts, meant to prevent forest fires, could occur this week. About 200,000 households and businesses in Northern California were notified that they might lose power starting late on Wednesday. PG&E has said it could take up to 10 years for the company to improve its electrical systems enough that preemptive blackouts become largely unnecessary. Frustrated by that timeline, the mayor of California's third biggest city, San Jose, is lobbying for a radical proposal. Charlie Turner has been finding out more from Rebecca Smith.
Rebecca, PG&E is in Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection for more than $30 billion in wildfire-related liabilities, and it shut off the power to millions of customers in a bid to prevent more wildfires. Now it's received a very interesting buyout proposal. Tell us who it is from.
Well, so far, it's being put forward by the city of San Jose, and it's aided by some advisors who are very familiar with PG&E, including a gentleman who represented the company in its first bankruptcy case between 2001 and 2004. So basically, San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo is looking for other cities and counties in California who are as dissatisfied with PG&E as he is to see if they could put together a coalition that would advance a public buyout of the company. And that would then result in it being converted into an electric and gas cooperative. So it would be a customer-owned utility.
Right. So the San Jose, California mayor's reasoning behind this is that as a cooperative, PG&E, as you say, would be owned by customers and also answerable to them.
Yes. He thinks that having direct control would result in a utility that was doing things more to the liking of its customers. And the proponents also say that there would be demonstrable financial advantages of being publicly owned, one of which is it wouldn't pay dividends anymore. And PG&E has paid many billions of dollars in dividends in recent years. So that would be a thing of the past. I mean, it's currently the dividend is suspended, but normally it pays more than $1 billion a year in dividends. That's money that could then be put back into the system instead.
Well, PG&E would obviously oppose this, and so would the utility's bondholders, I assume.
Yeah, right now you have, because the company's in bankruptcy, there are two different proposals that are being considered by the bankruptcy court. One is the proposal put forward by PG&E, and it has the backing of many of its big shareholders. And the other proposal is being put forward by bondholders. And that includes a lot of private equity and hedge fund owners that are investors in those bonds and, you know, other financial assets. So you've got two competing proposals now, neither of which do the cities, I think, feel represent the best interests of customers. They're very worried about the kind of utility that's going to emerge from bankruptcy.
Well, assessing any realistic prospects about this, there would probably be a lot of support for a public buyout, but PG&E would have to approve any such deal.
Yes. So I think the plan now is they're going to see if they can put together a coalition. And, you know, depending on how that goes, they either have leverage or they don't. There is a plan to send letters to the PG&E Board of Directors and to the California Public Utilities Commission in coming days to inform them of this plan that's being put together. I mean, it's still very bare bones. And I don't think that the coalition, if it ever comes to be, will feel that it's best going to the bankruptcy court. They're more likely to go to the Public Utilities Commission, feeling they have more leverage in that forum. And the reason being that the Utility Commission has to approve a plan of reorganization after it leaves the bankruptcy court in order for it to be implemented. They have to find that it's in the public interest.
PG&E said that it hasn't seen the proposal, but its facilities are not for sale and that it's working on solutions for the future. You can find all of our coverage of PG&E up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We're going to look at something strange that's been happening in markets this year. Stocks and bonds are both on the rise. The S&P 500 has risen 20% this year, and Treasury yields are also falling. Bond yields fall when prices rise. So what's happening? Quentin Webb explains.
Basically, what's happened is at the end of last year, markets were in a real funk. There was a fear that a big slowdown was coming, that China's economy was in deep trouble, and also that the US Federal Reserve wasn't really being responsive enough, that it was going to continue to keep interest rates steady or maybe even increase them further, and that would kind of add to the speed of the slowdown. And the last few months we've seen this drastic turnaround, really, where the Fed has pivoted. It's now kind of cut rates a couple of times and looks set to cut them a couple more times later this year. That's helped support stock prices. And on top of that, when you have the Fed cutting rates, that tends to kind of feed a rally in the bond markets.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. Exxon's climate change accounting is going on trial in New York. It's a rare look at how the oil industry accounts for the impact of climate change. Corinne Ramey has more.
So for Exxon, climate change regulation is a huge deal because it affects their business and it affects how they think about their business decades in the future. The allegation is that they told investors that they were applying this certain cost to their calculations of these things, but that they had this undisclosed internal guidance that said, actually, don't apply these costs when you're making cost projections and calculating these kinds of numbers.
The Attorney General's office said Exxon's misrepresentations caused investors to overvalue its stock. It estimated the damage to shareholders to be between $476 million and $1.6 billion. Exxon has denied wrongdoing. Here's Corinne again.
So Exxon, throughout the investigation, has repeatedly said it's all political. But it also says that a reasonable investor shouldn't expect and doesn't expect to know the details of all these internal calculations. I mean, we are looking at something that's decades in the future. And Exxon essentially says we told investors what they would expect to know and they trust us.
Corinne says the duration of the trial has been capped at 3 weeks, not counting the verdict or appeals. Former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is expected to be called as a witness. Finally, our series looking at women in the workplace continues today. We're going to focus on the military. Our reporter, Jennifer Forsyth, says opportunity has really changed in the military in recent years.
Ashton Carter in 2016 opened up all combat positions to women, which got
women over a huge barrier, which was that it was very hard to be promoted to the top echelons in any of the branches if you had not had a combat command. And up until that time, women were not eligible for some of those positions. So that kind of freed up the barriers to women, but there's still a lot of institutional obstacles and there's still outright bias. There are a lot of people who just think that women are not as strong leaders as men in some of the military branches.
But Jennifer says the very top positions have remained elusive to women.
The number of women who make general or admiral in the Navy are still very slim margins, and that's not that different from what we're seeing in the number of women who make CEO in the corporate world. There's a lot of similarities, but there are also some differences, some things that women in the corporate world don't have to deal with that women in the military do. For example, you have long deployments for anyone in the military and especially for leadership. So that makes it very difficult for, especially for any women who are mothers, who have a family. They're more likely to be married to someone in the military as well. So they may have a deployment in which they have to juggle literally two households. That's something that most CEOs don't have to do.
If you're a woman in the military, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at whatsnews, all one word, at WSJ.com or tweet us at WSJ Podcasts. Your comments might be used in follow-up reporting. That's What's News from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.